Chapter 11. Appreciate Brother Ken so much for leading us in singing. And don't forget our annual singing. Our night to host the singing is a week from Friday night. And Brother Ken and his crew always do a wonderful job in pulling that together and making it a special, special evening. So look at Hebrews chapter 11. I'm reminded of the fact that in recent years there have been a number of superhero movies to come out. And there have been so much emphasis on that, I guess, the success of these movies, that even, I think, in 2006, a television series was started. I haven't actually seen any episodes, but a series was started called Heroes. And basically, this series, Heroes, chronicles the lives of ordinary, everyday folks who gradually come to realize, or maybe in some cases suddenly come to realize, that they have superhuman abilities. They have the ability, maybe, to be a hero. And so it talks about their coming to grips with the reality and the powers they have, how it affects their lives, the decisions they make, and the actions that follow from that. I say that to say this. It seems to me, as we look at the book of Hebrews, and especially in Hebrews chapter 11, we find here a chronicling of the lives of people who were in fact Old Testament heroes, who came to realize that they had an opportunity to do great things in the name of God. And so it talks about their lives and the choices they make and the influence their lives had on other people. It wasn't terribly uncommon in the ancient world to call forth memories of heroes from days gone by. Greek speakers or orators in the Greek culture would from time to time remind the people of great heroes from their past and put them forth as examples. It was also common in the Hebrew culture as well. For example, in the book of 4 Maccabees, you have a section in there where Matthias talks about some great heroes of the Hebrew people and heroes who were faithful to the law of Moses. And he emphasizes the need to be like them. And he even compares them to athletes who are competing in an arena. It's interesting because that is very similar to what we find in Hebrews chapters 11 and 12. And so doing something that was done periodically in his culture, though to a further extent, because we don't really find as extensive lists like one we find here in places like the Greek culture. But basically, the writer of the Hebrew letter is pulling forth and pulling out of the great list of Hebrew heroes of faith that might have been listed, some key people to serve as examples as heroes of faith. And what we're going to look at, we began last week looking at Hebrews 11. We looked at the first six verses. And tonight I want us to look at verse 7 through verse 19 of Hebrews chapter 11. We need to understand that the springboard for verses 7 and following is verse 6. There, the Hebrew writer says, "For without faith it is impossible to please Him. For he that comes to God must believe that He is, and that He's a rewarder of those who diligently seek Him." He emphasizes that if we want to be in a relationship with God, if we want to draw close to Him, we need to believe in Him, and not only believe in who He is and that He is, but believe that He will do what He says He will do, that He will give what He has promised to give. And really what He's doing in the rest of Hebrews chapter 11 is He's giving examples of people who did that, who put their faith in God, who believed that He is, and that He's a rewarder of those who diligently seek Him. I want us to look at two thoughts or ideas or points, however you want to describe it. We're going to use the letter H as we focus tonight on heroes and hope. And what I'd like to do is look at four of the heroes found in this book. You may recall, last time we were together, we looked at two heroes, Abel and Enoch. Tonight we're going to look at four. Really, the key character in most of this is going to be Abraham. But some of the others that are going to be referred to tonight, we're going to think about Noah, and not only Abraham, but Sarah, in reference to Isaac, though we'll focus a little more on Isaac next week. So if you would, let's look at Hebrews chapter 11, and let's talk about heroes and hope. If we look at starting in verse 7 of Hebrews chapter 11, he begins to highlight some of the heroes, and he starts out with Noah. Notice that he says, "By faith Noah, being warned by God of things not yet seen, in reverence prepared an ark for the salvation of his soul." And he goes on to say, "And by so doing he condemned the world." reminded of the reality that when people choose to do right, there's a sense in which they condemn those who do wrong, for they serve as an example of the fact that those who choose to do wrong could have chosen to do what is right. I'm just going to hit a few highlights as we look at each of these characters, but I think there's a theme that runs through the characters. I want you to notice here as he's talking about Noah, it says he responded in faith concerning things that he had not seen that he was warned about. In other words, there may have been as many as 120 years from the time that Noah was told of a warning that the world was going to be destroyed, that human beings at least were going to be wiped from the face of the earth, save Noah and his family. From that time until the time the flood came, may have been as many as 120 years, that he spent 100 years building the ark. I want you to understand that Noah had to have the ability, that we need to understand, that Noah had to have the ability to see 100 plus years into the future. And he had to think about a reality that he had never seen. We don't know if Noah had ever seen a flood. We do know Noah had never seen a flood to the magnitude he was going to see some 100 to 120 years in the future. We don't know that Noah had ever seen rain. We know that from the early passages in Genesis chapter 2, it tells us the earth was watered in the garden by a mist. Did that continue? Did rain begin after that? We really don't know. But the point is, Noah was asked to do something and to prepare for something that for which at least to some degree he had never seen and had never experienced. Based on his faith in God, not on witness, not on something he'd seen and experienced, but totally on his trust that God would tell him the truth, he spent 100 years building an ark based on faith. In verses 8 through 11, he talks about Abraham, and notice again that common theme. He says, obeyed by going to a place which he was to receive as an inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going. And we can go back to Genesis chapter 12 and see one of the calls of Abraham, known at that time as Abram. And Abram was asked to leave everything he had known, to leave much of his family, to leave his culture, to leave what he was used to go to a land that he had not seen, to a place where he had not been. And the emphasis on the fact that Abraham trusted that God would make the promise a reality, that God would give him what he promised to give him. It says that he lived as an alien in the land of promise. It was going to become the land of his descendants. But he didn't live there as a resident. He didn't live there as an owner of the land. He lived there as a foreigner. An alien resident in the land who didn't have all the rights and privileges of the people who lived there. It's interesting if you look in Acts chapter 7 and verse 5 there, Stephen talking about Abraham said God did not give him when he came into the land 1 foot of land. In fact, if we go to Genesis chapter 23, when Abraham's wife died, he didn't own any land to bury her in. And he had to buy enough land to have a burial plot. But even though he owned a burial plot, it was not a place to live. He said, in fact, in the text that he buried a place that he might bury his loved one out of his sight. So it was somewhere he wasn't going to live. So Abraham was promised the promised land, and it became a reality for his descendants. But it wasn't a reality for Abraham. All he died owning was a burial plot for his family. He didn't own a place to live. But he was willing to live that way because ultimately the text says he was looking for another land. He was looking for a city built by God. He trusted that God would reward him if he put his faith in God. Remember what Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 6, he that cometh to God must believe that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. And so what this text is saying is that's what Abraham believed. And so based on that faith, he left his home, he left what was comfortable to go to a place he had not seen. And we look at verses 11 and 12, it then talks about his wife Sarah, and it's really continuing the discussion of Abraham. And talking about Sarah, it says she herself received the ability to conceive well beyond her years. She would give birth to Isaac when she was 90 years old. And it says that she considered him faithful who had promised. Now, it's an interesting statement because we go back to Genesis chapter 18. When she first heard that she was going to have a child at such an age, the text says she laughed. But it's also interesting when you get over to Genesis chapter 21 verse 6, when Isaac is born, they gave him the name Isaac, she said, because God has made her laugh. She says, "For the Lord has made me laugh." And that's what Isaac's name means, is laughter. So I find it of interest that when she first heard she was going to have a child, she couldn't imagine it, couldn't fathom it. And so she laughed at the very thought. But that laughter of doubt by Genesis 21 and verse 6 turned into laughter of joy. And so I think if you look at her life and you look at her faith that she's laid down here as an example of faith for us, we're reminded that faith comes at different paces and different ways for different people. Sarah's faith took a little more time, but it came. And she believed and came to believe that God would do what He said He would do, and she rejoiced when God did what He said He was going to do. That even in her age, and even in the age of her husband, the text said, one as good as dead. The idea there is that he was as good as dead in the ability to have a son. I mean, we're looking at Abraham at approximately 100 years of age or thereabout. And so what he's saying is the idea, one writer has put it, is that there was as much chance for Abraham to have a child as for a dead man to have a child. But he had a child because he and his wife believed that God would do what He said He would do. And then we can find, if we look over in chapter 11, verses 17 through 20, continuing the discussion of Abraham, but kind of moving from focus on his wife back to Abraham himself. It says, "By faith Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. And he who had received the promises was offering his only son." And he goes on to say that he was clear in his understanding of the role of his son in the promises of God. Because he makes reference here to Genesis chapter 21 and verse 12, where God lets him know that it was through Isaac, not Ishmael, but Isaac, that the promise the Father had made to him would come. And so it says, even though he knew that Isaac was the son of promise, you see, God had promised Abram back there in Genesis chapter 12 that He would make him a great nation, and He would give him a land of His own, and that someday, one day, through him, all nations of the earth would be blessed. And so it is that there in chapter 21, verse 12, God says, Isaac is the one that's all going to happen through. Then you get to chapter 22 in verse 1, and God is going to come through a messenger and speak to Abraham and say, "I want you to sacrifice your son." So He says, this is the son through which all the promises are coming, and oh, by the way, I want you to sacrifice the son all the promises are going through. And the Hebrew writer gives us some insight into the thinking of Abraham when he prepared to offer Isaac. And it's interesting how it's worded here, because it's literally worded here in Hebrews as when he was in the process of offering his son. It's not just that he was willing to offer his son, but if we combine this with the events of Genesis chapter 22, it's that while he was in the process, while he was attempting to put his son to death, God intervened and stopped it based on what is found back in Genesis chapter 22. Why did he do it? In other words, I don't believe Abraham expected God to stop it. The text here says in Hebrews chapter 11, he considered that God was able to raise people even from the dead. I don't think he believed God would stop it. I just believe that he believed that God would raise his son Isaac back to life after he put him to death. He trusted that God would do what he said he would do. And so as we look at these four heroes that he emphasizes and he highlighted, I want you to notice that with each of them, they put trust in a promise. They put trust in something God said He was going to do. And they put faith in something they had not seen. Okay? He had not seen his son raised from the dead, yet he was willing to sacrifice him.
Sarah had not seen a woman of her age give birth to a child, yet she believed that God would do it. Abraham had not seen the land God wanted him to go to, but yet he went anyway. Noah had not seen a flood or an ark like he was going to build, yet he did it anyway. Noah believed that the rain would come. Abraham believed the land would be given. Sarah came to believe that a child would be born. And Abraham believed that a son named Isaac would be raised from the dead, even if his life was sacrificed. And so he lays out these great heroes, but what he stresses about them is that they put their trust in the promises of God. That's important because that's exactly what Hebrews chapter 11, verse 6 says has to happen if a person is going to be in a relationship with God. And that brings us to hope. So think about hope. What's interesting is I want you to think about if you were making a list of great Bible heroes, who would be on your list? I just want you to kind of mentally in your mind, right now, just make your list. Who are some people that would be there? And who would be at the top of your list? And can you think of anybody that's not on this list that you think absolutely would have to be on your list? Okay, you know, what about Aaron? Okay, or for example, it wasn't too long ago we were studying the book of Joshua. How in the world, you know, could you leave Joshua out? There are all kinds of people that could have been listed. He didn't try to list every hero in the Old Testament. It's also interesting that when it comes to the heroes he discussed, they were all people who were people of faith prior to the children of Israel taking possession of the promised land. Now, when he gets to the end, he's going to kind of start a summary list, and he's going to say, I could have mentioned this person and this person and this person, and I could have talked about them. And when he kind of moves over into that list, he's going to start talking about some people who were heroes after they took possession of the promised land. But none of these people were. Okay, all the way up to Rahab. You remember Rahab lived in the city of Jericho. And when Rahab made her decision of faith, the children of Israel didn't own the promised land yet. In fact, her city was going to be the first one to fall on the western side of the Jordan River. Okay, and so you look through all these folks. And one author by the name of James Thompson made an interesting comment. And he said that all the heroes are outsiders who have no land of their own. In other words, it may not be accidental that he chooses people prior to Israel going into the promised land. Even when you get to Rahab, she's a woman who's about to lose her land. Okay, her city's about to be destroyed, and she's about to have to make a decision on which side she's going to be on. Is she going to trust in the promises God has made to Israel concerning this land, or is she going to trust her false gods, or her political leaders, or her army? I think it's significant, and I don't believe it's accidental. I believe the choice of people to talk about ties in to the point he's trying to get across. Again, remember, what is he doing in Hebrews? He's trying to encourage people who are dealing with persecution. He's also trying to encourage people who may be tempted to leave Christianity, may be tempted to give up their faith in Christ. And so what he does is he says, let me talk about some heroes of faith. You as Hebrew Christians, you can imagine him saying to those who had first read this letter, I know that when you look around you, you see horrible things. And you remember he talked about things they were dealing with in chapter 10, the loss of property, the loss of freedom, being made a public spectacle in their cities, mocked and ridiculed on public display. He says, I know when you look around you, you see these things. But he says, let me tell you about some people who also looked around them and saw some discouraging things. Some people who were given some promises who could not in the immediate vicinity see the reality of those promises. But they trusted in those promises and they stayed faithful to God even though it lay far into the future. If they did that, if Noah did that, if Abram did that, if Sarah did that, you can do it as well. And so what he does is he sums up the hope of these heroes. Look at what he says starting in verse 13. He said, all these died in faith without receiving the promises, but having seen them and having welcomed them from a distance, and having confessed that they were strangers and exiles in the earth. For those who say such things make it clear that they are seeking a country of their own. And if indeed they had been thinking of that country from which they went out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country. That is a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for He has prepared a city for them. He's summarizing the attitude of these people. And I think that's why, when it came to the people He discussed, He chose people prior to the Promised Land. Because most of these folks were looking for something. Okay? Noah is in a boat looking for a mountaintop, sending out the birds, wanting to know, have the waters receded? Is there a place to rest the boat? Can we start again? Can we find a place to live? Abraham and Sarah are in process of going to the Promised Land. He's going to talk about Isaac and Jacob and Joseph and Moses, all folks wanting the land of promise, yet not fully realizing the land of promise, all the way up to Rahab struggling with the loss of her land and her home and her city. And so He intentionally chose these people looking for a place to belong, looking for the fulfillment of promises, and says to these Hebrew Christians, that's exactly how you're living. You just need to hang in there and realize that the promise may lie yet in the future, but the promise will be realized for you just as it was realized and became that hope became a reality for these great heroes of faith. They died without receiving all the promises in this life. For many of them, the promises would be realized in the future through their descendants. Yet the text says, they welcomed them at a distance. Remember back up in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1, it says, faith is the assurance of things hoped for. And we talked about that word assurance was the idea that faith experiences the reality of something that cannot be seen with the eyes. That it is able to see the unseen and experience what lies yet in the future. And he's saying that's exactly how Noah and Abraham and Isaac and others lived their lives. It's interesting when you go to John chapter 8 and verse 56, notice what Jesus says, your father Abraham rejoiced to see my day. He saw it and was glad. In other words, he says, Abraham knew I was coming. That's what Jesus is saying. And when he found out I was coming, though it lay many years in his future, 2,000 years in his future, he said when he saw it, when he believed in it, and saw it through faith, he rejoiced in a reality that wouldn't happen for 2,000 years. And so the Hebrew writer is saying that's how all of these people lived. They lived with a faith that looks to the unseen, a faith that looks to the future. And so because of that, they were willing to be strangers and aliens in the land of promise. They could have been frustrated and thought, hey, this is supposed to be our land. When are we going to get our promised land? But they trusted that it would come someday. In fact, in Genesis chapter 23 and verse 4, when he's having to buy a burial place for his wife, he says to the locals, I am a stranger in your land. I'm not a local. But he was willing to live that way because he trusted in the promises of God. And in verse 16 it says, but as it is, they desire a better country, that is a heavenly country, where God is not ashamed to be called their God. Why was God unashamed of Noah and Abraham and Sarah? Because they put faith in His promises. They trusted in what He said He would do, and were able to look beyond the seen to the unseen. It's a fascinating statement here in these verses. Because in most of the Old Testament, we don't get much of a glimpse of eternity. Okay, truly Paul said to Timothy that life and immortality came to light through the gospel. In other words, in the New Testament, we hear more about eternity and heaven and the glories there than we do anywhere in the Old Testament. Yet we get a glimpse into the heart of some people in the Old Testament through the book of Hebrews. That while the books of the Old Testament don't say a great deal about heaven and the glories there like we would see in a book like Revelation, the text still says that these great heroes of faith lived their lives believing in that reality, lived their lives guided by that hope. So as we think about the hope that is found here, we talked about these four great heroes that he highlights in this section. Folks who trusted in the promises of God. And as we talked about these heroes, they were folks guided by hope. They were people who viewed themselves as strangers in this world. They were not caught up with in the things of this world. They viewed themselves as just passing through. They were strangers here because they were seeking something better. And so if something bad happened here, that was okay because this wasn't home. They were seeking something better. The promised land, it really wasn't what they were after. They were seeking a heavenly promised land. So how is it these folks were able to do amazing things? How is it that they were able to overcome difficulty and struggle and strife? Because for them, life was not about this world. For them, life was about an unseen world that lies beyond. These heroes of faith believed in the promises of God, and they believed that there was something better prepared for them. And based on that faith, they took action. Would you sing, take out your psalm books and turn to the hymn of encouragement? And as you turn there, I'm reminded of a question that was asked by Adrian Olson of his father, or actually his grandfather, Mike Rainey. Mike Rainey was a sergeant in E Company of the 101st Airborne during World War II, one of the most well-known companies to fight during World War II. And you may have heard the quote, but Adrian asked his grandfather, having heard about the 101st Airborne, a lot of things were being written and said, and you had the miniseries on HBO that came out. And so Adrian asked his grandfather, he said, "Were you a hero in the war?" And his grandfather responded and said, "No, I wasn't a hero, but I served in a company of heroes." In other words, he didn't feel like he should call himself a hero, but he said, "I served and I sacrifice with people every day who as a group were heroes." Now as you look at folks like Noah and Abraham and Sarah and Isaac, I don't know about you, but I look at myself and say, I'm not a hero like them. I'm not an Abraham. I'm not a Noah. I haven't done something that amazing. Maybe that's true for all of us. But we can serve in a company of heroes, in the company of heroes. Because you know what made them heroes? It was that they believed in the promises of God. They believed that something better lay in the future for the God's people. And based on that faith, they acted and they obeyed. And so it seems to me that every time somebody in this room believes in the promises of God, believes in a better place in the future, and lives for God because of that, you are in the company of heroes. And so my challenge for us tonight is that if we believe in what God says, then let's act on what we say we believe. If we believe that we need to express our faith in repentance, confession, and baptism, and we've not done that, then let's do it and be in the company of heroes. If we believe as children of God that if we seek His forgiveness, He'll forgive us and help us to start over, if that's what we need to do and we believe it, then let's do something about it and get our brethren to pray for us and encourage us. If we believe that prayer makes a difference in dealing with life's struggles and we need those prayers, then let's act on it. Please come, you're among friends, as we stand and sing.